Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, Text 27. Etat Vara Hi Samsara Guna karma nibandana agyana mula aparataha api pumsaha svapa. That should be svapna, arpyate. Did I miss something? Eva art. Thank you. Eva arpyate. Etadvaro hi samsaro guna karma nibandana agyana mulo partopi pumsa svapna ivarpyate. Etadvaro hi samsaro guna karma nibandana agyana mulo partopi pumsa svapna ivarpyate. Etadvaro hi samsaro guna karma nibandana agyana mulo partopi pumsa svapna ivarpyate. Please chant. Ladies. Etat, this, Dvara, whose door, he, indeed, Samsara, material existence, in which one suffers threefold miseries, Guna Karma, Nibandana, captivation by the three modes of material nature, Ajnana Mula, whose root is ignorance, Apartha, without factual meaning, Api, even, Pumsaha, of the living entity, Svapna, a dream, Eva, like, Arpyate, is placed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The unwanted condition of temporary life is called ignorance. Oh, I didn't get the translation. Sorry about that. Through polluted intelligence, one is subjected to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by material existence, like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers. Material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. Please repeat. Through polluted intelligence, one is subjected to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by material existence. Like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The unwanted condition of temporary life is called ignorance. One can very easily understand that the material body is temporary, for it is generated at a certain date and ends at a certain date, after undergoing the six kinds of change, namely birth, death, growth, maintenance, transformation, and which one I left out? Yes, dwindling. This condition of the eternal soul is due to his ignorance, and although it is temporary, it is unwanted. Because of ignorance, one is put into temporary bodies one after another. The spirit soul, however, does not need to enter such temporary bodies. He does so only due to his ignorance or his forgetfulness of Krishna. Therefore, in the human form of life, when one's intelligence is developed, one should change his consciousness by trying to understand Krishna. Then one can be liberated. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4:9, where the Lord says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham puna janma naitimam eti sorjana. Which means, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Unquote. Unless one understands Krishna and comes to Krishna consciousness, one must continue in material bondage. To end this conditional life, one must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, that is demanded by the Supreme Lord, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. As advised by Maharaj Rishabhadev, Nasadu manye yata atmano yam asad api kleshada asa deha. One must be intelligent enough to understand that although one's body is temporary and will not endure for long, as long as one has a body, he must undergo the pangs of material existence. Therefore, if by good association, repeat, if by good association, no, I didn't mean you should repeat, I'm repeating, but that's okay, because it's really important. By the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, one takes to Krishna consciousness. His conditional life of material existence is vanquished, and his original consciousness, known as Krishna consciousness, is revived. When one is Krishna conscious, he can realize that material existence, whether one is awake or dreaming, is nothing but a dream and has no factual value. This realization is possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord. This realization is possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord. This grace is also present in the form of the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is for everyone to engage in welfare activities to awaken the foolish living entity, especially in human society, so that he may come to the platform of Krishna consciousness and benefit by liberation from conditional life. In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya cites the following verses. Dukha rupopi samsaro buddhi purvam avapyate. Yatha svapne shirascedam svayam kritvatmano vasha tato dukham avapyeta tatha jagarito pitu janan apyatmano dukham avashastu pravartate today. One must realize that the material condition of life is full of distresses. One can realize this with purified intelligence. When one's intelligence is purified, he can understand that unwanted, temporary, material life is just like a dream. Just as one suffers pain when his head is cut off in a dream, in ignorance one suffers not only while dreaming, but also while awake. Without the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one continues in ignorance and is thus subjected to material distresses in various ways. Oma gyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. To begin with, this is absolutely amazing that a 5-year-old boy sitting and talking to his playmates is informing them of this wonderful philosophy, a philosophy which he heard in the womb of his mother, and which he not only remembered, but which he also understood, and understood so well due to the blessings of Narada Muni. While I was reading the purport, I said again, and good to good association. And here he had the best of association. As we know, Narada Muni is an incarnation of bhakti, of devotional love. So he does not merely say words, but he says words which he fully understood, which he has fully realized, and which he can also introduce into another person's heart, so that he too, or she too, can also fully realize it. This is the power of a great, pure, incarnation of bhakti. And this is exactly what happened when Narada Muni was relating this philosophy to Prahlad Maharaj's mother, Queen Kayadu, during the time that she was spending at his ashram to protect her against various types of persons. At one point, Indra was about to drag her off to his own kingdom, but when he found out, because she was pregnant, and he thought wrongfully that the child in her womb would be a demon like his father, but was then enlightened by Narada Muni to the effect that not only would he not be a demon, but he would become a great devotee. So at that point, Indra circumambulated Queen Kayadu, because she was holding this very wonderful, great, glorious child, and then went off to his own planet. So Narada Muni was communicating all of these wonderful truths to the queen, and Prahlad, who was just in the womb, was listening to all of this. By the way, even Western scientists have confirmed this, that a fetus in the womb from the seventh month on can actually hear what is going on outside. And anyone who wants to know which books they are, I'll be glad to share them with you if you so desire that. So, getting on, the important point is that how potent, how powerful, how strong and how clear the preaching of Narada Muni was. So that Prahlad had it so perfect that, not only perfect, but so realized, so deep, and he was so filled with this that when he grew up, became 5 years old, he would not go anywhere else except where this philosophy was. In other words, he stayed with the philosophy. He preached the philosophy. He chanted God's names. And although he was rather alone because he didn't have anybody to do that with, since it was illegal to do that in the King Hiranyakashipu's kingdom. After all, Lord Vishnu was the enemy. Or I should say, Hiranyakashipu was the enemy of Lord Vishnu. Well, the main point is that Hiranyakashipu hated Lord Vishnu because he had killed his brother Hiranyaksha. And so he had vengeance, and he performed an enormous amount of austerities with the false idea, the false view that he would one day find Lord Vishnu, capture him, fight him, and kill him. And he felt he was invincible and invulnerable as a result of different boons or blessings that Lord Brahma had given him. So we have here, as I said, Prahlad is not only communicating these incredible, glorious, wonderful teachings, but his children are understanding it. I mean, I have preached to so many people, they didn't understand what I was saying, because I didn't have that potency and that clarity and that depth. But they're understanding. So that's something really to pray for. To be able to preach in such a way that people will not just hear us, not just nod to us, but actually understand it, and one step further, actually be able to implement it in their lives. Because that's the test. Once you begin to implement it in your life and you begin to follow the instructions and practice the instructions and go through the process, so many different benefits begin to reveal themselves. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, of course, was very blessed, very benefited, and all these children who were receiving this teaching were also greatly blessed and benefited. So, as I said, this is truly amazing. So amazing that Srila Prabhupada quotes this particular seventh canto about Prahlad Maharaj in my observation, it may be slightly askewed, but more than any other example he gives as a great devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. Because Prahlad Maharaj did it right. He had it all right. He never stopped thinking of Krishna or Lord Vishnu. And he couldn't stop thinking about it and telling it to his friends. So coming back now to this verse itself, it's mentioned that this material world is nothing more than a dream.
It's a temporary dream. And I know that over the years, that realization has become clearer and clearer the older I've grown and the more people I've seen who have died. The more people you see who disappear from this world, whom you thought were going to be here another 5 years, 10 years. I know people who were in their 30s, and I figured they'd be here at least to their 50, but then they're gone. People who were in their 50s, I would see them daily, but then they're gone. Relatives that I had, friends that I had, business associates that I had, gone, 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 gone. After a while, you really get the picture. That we're not going to be around, and nobody else is going to be around. And anything and everything that's happening is just very, very temporary. Although it appears to be very, very permanent. For example, you go outside and you see a puddle of water from the rain. And you look at the puddle, and you keep looking at it, and it's there. It's there for 5 minutes, it's there for 10 minutes, and yet it's really not there the way it was the first moment that you looked at it, because slowly but surely it is gradually evaporating. The water is going into the air in the form of vapor. But we don't see that, and it's happening very slowly. And finally, if you keep looking, then you start to see that the puddle has shrunk, and then there is no puddle. So things are here, things are slowly disappearing, and things disappear. It's the same thing with our bodies. The bodies are, as it's mentioned in the purport, they're born, they grow, they're maintained for some time. They produce byproducts, and then they slowly diminish, and then they die. So everything in this material world is in a state of flux, a state of change, going from one state to another. As the embodied soul passes in this body from childhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Why is he not bewildered? Because he knows while things appear to be permanent, they're not. You go across the street and you look at the trees there. In March, April, the leaves are bright green. May and June, they're not as bright as they were. July, August, they're definitely getting dull. September, October, they're getting brownish. And then they're on the ground. Yet when we looked at them day after day when they were green, it seemed that they were going to stay green. But then they became darkened. And eventually, they dropped. Now, this is a very wonderful consciousness to have. It is said that sages have the consciousness of past, present, and future. And this is basically what this is. You look at something, but you don't see it only as it appears. We see it as it once was. For example, this marble was once a big chunk. It's this chunk of rock. And then it was excavated, and then it was polished, smoothened, and then set into this floor. And one day, we can see there are certain cracks in it, which were not there originally. So change is going on. You look in the mirror, your face was smooth, and then 20 or 30 years later, you start to see lines coming into the face, lines under the eyes, a few bags there too, maybe. So the face loses its smoothness. So all this is change, and it has to bring us to the realization that this body is definitely going to go. And as I said, whatever we look at in the material world will one day disappear. We see so many civilizations that rose and then fell, and archaeologists have found the remains of these civilizations. Just a rock here, a few rocks there, maybe a few skeletons, but everything is changing. So the big question really comes down to, well, what am I doing about it? Am I just going to die like anyone else and suffer the threefold miseries in the course of growing older and older? Those miseries which come from our old body and mind, the miseries which arise from other living entities, and the miseries which come from calamities or catastrophes such as earthquakes and volcanoes and so forth. I just read just recently, it was on the news, that Hawaii is slowly being swallowed up by water. And in 1.5 million years, it's supposed to be all the mountains flatten. Hawaii becomes like a plain. And they have measured this. They actually have it. And it's actually happening not from the seawater, but it's happening from its own water in those mountains down below. So the point is that change is always going on. But again, I ask the same question. What are we doing about it? Are we going to go through that suffering and then come back and do it again and again and again as a result of identifying ourselves with our bodies? And from that identification, identifying ourselves with some accomplishments, some acquirement, some achievement. You may have a trophy, or you have a certificate. Somebody gives you some medals. You get applauded. You get adoration. You get glorification. You get all of this, and you hang on to it. You hold on to it because it has become one with what you think or what I think, what we all think is life. But it's not life. It's the dream. The dream that Srila Prabhupada is talking about here. It's here, and we like to think that it's going to continue because, after all, I was here yesterday, I'm here today, why shouldn't I be here tomorrow? But one tomorrow, we will be gone. As Shakespeare so very nicely said it, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps into this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life is but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. That's it. Lots of noise, lots of sound and fury signifying nothing. By the way, Shakespeare is not my spiritual master. So I just want to be clear on that point. So all of this, but it's very apropos. He said a lot of things which actually bear out some of our, just echo some of our Vedic teachings. So the important point is, what do we do? How do we prevent all of this misery, suffering, uncertainty, doubt? It was at one point I missed in the early part of the talk, and that is, Prahlad Maharaj was talking because he felt the sufferings that all his friends were going to go through. They were going to suffer just the way he sees his father suffering, just the way he sees all the demons there suffering. He could see it. He could know what they were going through. Not only that, but he knew there was an alternative, something better, higher, bigger, grander, real bliss, real peace, real strength, real love. Something that they didn't know about, but which he had, and which he felt compelled to share, and to give, and to spread. This is what he felt, and he had to, he felt compelled to. A devotee who is filled or pregnant with transcendental bliss feels compelled to want to give this out and share this, for example, in the form of the books, in the form of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, in the form of preaching wherever one may get the opportunity, such as universities or different temples and so forth, or just one-on-one people in the street. So devotees want to share this because they know that people are suffering. They know they were suffering, and they have some relief from that suffering. And as a result of that relief, they feel that they can feel not only the sufferings of others, but they want to try to enable others to feel the peace and the joy and the happiness and the satisfaction that they're feeling. This is the nature of transcendental joy, transcendental peace. The nature of material peace, material joy, is very, very temporary, and it is often filled with envy. If I see you're enjoying and I'm not enjoying, then I envy you. And I wish you didn't enjoy because you make me aware of how miserable I am. It's the old thing, misery likes company. So this is material type of joy. Or a person, he has won some medal in an Olympics, and he's got his trophy, and he's cracked a world record. And he, year by year, goes, and he just savors that record. Nobody is better than me. I've got the record. And then one year, somebody breaks the record, whether it's track or swimming or whatever, and he's overshadowed. He's crushed. He's overcome. And consequently, what happens is that he feels like he's a nobody again. His record has been stolen. And the result of that record being stolen is he's miserable. He was living in a false happiness in a dream that he was better than others. And this is what we learn in Krishna consciousness will not stay us. It will not maintain us. It will not help us. It will not strengthen us. It will not give us the happiness that the soul is seeking but can never find in the material world. So what do? We do the things and we take them so seriously. Once we know that death is a sure thing, once we train our mind to remember that, yes, death is coming, death is coming, death is coming, death is coming. It may sound morbid to a materialist, but to a devotee, it's not morbid. One very great saint, he was a Catholic saint, Saint Gerard Majella, wonder worker, and he could pray, so many people were cured just by his prayers, and he would go to sleep with a skull at the side of his, he didn't sleep on a bed, he just slept on some straw, and he used a brick for his pillow. So he would had this skull, and he would look at it. When he would wake up, he would look at it. When he'd go to sleep, he says, there's where I'm headed. So I don't say that we should all go out and buy skulls if you can. If they're even buyable. I'm not sure about that. But if you, I know universities can get them, but I don't know if they sell them to individuals yet. But anyway, the important point is that we need some means, some way of remembering that these bodies are going to disappear. It's not enough to remember it once a day or even 10 times a day. With the remembrance of the fact that death will disappear, death will make this body disappear. With that remembrance also comes the fact that we have an opportunity to grow and to glow and to go back home, back to Godhead. We have that opportunity. And therefore, every second, as Srila Prabhupada so often mentions, don't waste it. Treasure it. Cherish it. Hold it like a miser holds his diamond. He holds it to his heart. He goes to sleep with it on his heart. He doesn't want anybody to steal it. So we have to hold that realization, that remembrance, that death will take us. And we can, it's kind of like we're in a race. In back of us is the lion of Maya. In front of us is the lion of Krishna. And the lion of Maya is chasing us, and we're running, we're chanting. At least we should be chanting. We're chanting, and we're singing Hare Krishna. We're reading these wonderful books. We're remembering Krishna as often as we can. And as we do that, we're getting closer to the lion of Krishna, who when he swallows us up, what happens is that we go back home, back to Godhead, to his world. But if we don't take advantage of every second, every moment that is available to us, then the lion of Maya swallows us. And we simply go back into the world of birth, death, disease, old age, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That is all we have to look forward to, which is a very empty, miserable, dreary existence. And although it may have little spots, little temporary spots of pleasure, they're not worth all the pain that we have to experience. A pound of pleasure feels like 100 pounds, a pound of pleasure, when compared to the pain that we get of that pound of pain. That pound of pain feels like 100 pounds because we're being distracted from the sense pleasure that we want to experience, but we no longer can because of the fact that we may be ill, we may be diseased, or we may have an accident, or so many things. So the whole point of this is to constantly realize it's a dream. It's a dream. It's a dream which will end in another dream, and then we will take birth in another dream. And the dream, it's like at night, I don't know, I know I have had in a given night sometimes 3 and 4 different dreams. And that's what material life is like. You have one dream, then you get another dream. Or it's like going into a movie house. You go into one, you know, they have these 12 plexes. So you go into one plex, you see one movie, and then that's over. That's one lifetime. Then you go to the next plex, see that movie, then that's over. Another lifetime. But we never get out. We forgot there's a lobby and there's an outside. We've totally forgotten it. No. And then what happens is that luckily if we sit down next to someone in the movie house and he taps us, he says, hey, by the way, did you see the sunshine out there beyond the lobby? Sunshine? What are you talking about? He's forgotten that there is another world, just as we have forgotten the spiritual world. And so we have this marvelous, wonderful opportunity to take advantage. Srila Prabhupada has mercifully given it to us. And if we can always try to recondition our mind, to recall, to remember, to not waste a moment, not waste a second, because you can't recover them. You can't pull them back. And once they're gone, they're gone. So every moment should be utilized for the prosecution of Krishna conscious activities in full Krishna consciousness. And by doing it in full Krishna consciousness, that means remembering Krishna. It's not enough to really remember that it's a dream. That's only half of the pie, so to speak. We have to remember that Krishna, the spiritual master, gets us out of the dream. Both have to be remembered. If you don't remember it's a dream, it's very possible you won't even remember your spiritual master or Krishna. But once we remember both of them and these instructions that they've given us, then we're properly situated. And being properly situated, we will perform our devotional service in the manner that Krishna advised Arjuna. And therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. So this is the instruction of Krishna. To whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, whatever austerities you perform, do it for me, Krishna says. If you do this, you'll be freed from the bondage to all auspicious and inauspicious activities or work. And ultimately, you will come to me. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments that anyone would like to make? Got 3 seconds. 1, 2, 2.5, 2¾, 3. Finished. Vas. Hari Bol. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam.